Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. Myself and Bill, we've been working on this book for a whole lot of time putting it together, and we're finally announcing that it has been released. It's up, it's live. So hey, welcoming back Bill Beimel, CEO and founder of First Lien Capital, to the show. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be with you, Adam.
Come on, man. So I know you have, this is your, now you're a multi-time published author. You have another book out, Win-Win Revolution, which we'll talk about that as well. But your first Mission Matters release with us, how do you feel?
It's phenomenal. And what I'm most excited about is I wrote this chapter, it's called Play to Win. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it, I was looking it up this morning. I said, when did we actually go to print with this thing? And I was one of the first chapters in the book, yep. I think, complete. It was June of last year. Yeah. And it was meant to speak to what the next year or two might look like in my world of real estate and mortgages. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how much predictions I have already come true in what I wrote in the chapter. So.
I saw it, and you and I have been having these kind of discussions offline about maybe this, I'm using these words, you didn't, but that whole crystal ball thing, I was like, as we're going further and further into this, I'm like, okay, Bill, like this is interesting. And we'll go into some of those specifics in a moment, of course. But before we do that, you already know the drill. We'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with our Mission Matters Minute. So, Bill, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Bill, what mission matters to you?
The mission that matters most to me, Adam, is simple. Well, and yet so complex. Mm-hmm. I want to make a difference in the world, and I want to leave a legacy. I want to impact the world in a positive way, people, their livelihood, and, you know, really leaving that educational impact and really having an influence on folks and making the world a better place. That's the mission that matters most to me.
It's great. Love bringing mission-based executives and entrepreneurs on the show to share, you know, why they do what they do, how they're doing it, and really what we can all learn from that so that we all grow together. So great having you back on. And I guess maybe just to get us kicked off here, let's just dive right into the book. So Play to Win, Investing at the End of the Great Vacation. Now, again, you wrote this, I believe said last June or so. Right. What was the inspiration for the content? Like, where did it all start for you? Because a lot of different things you could have wrote about.
Yeah, I am a money manager in essence, but our focus is real estate and mortgages. Mm-hmm. And so being ahead of the trends, being on the forefront of where the industry is going in terms of valuations, the way things get financed, where there may be distress and opportunity, being on the forefront of that is the key to being a successful manager who really creates alpha for his clients. And what Play to Win was about was we were in June of last year, we were 3 months into the beginning of these interest rate increases. Mm-hmm. And what did that mean? What did that foretell? What was ahead at the time? Mm-hmm. It really, the standard line was, you know, this might just be temporary. You know, hopefully this won't continue. You know, hopefully inflation will get under its hands. You know, we will get control of it. And a lot of those things have yet to happen. Mm-hmm. Interest rates have continued to rise. There's never been a time in American history where the federal government has raised interest rates by 5% or more in less than 12 months. Yeah. That time happened last year. At the time, and it was just starting at the time that I wrote this episode, this chapter. So, you know, predicting what would happen and seeing that coming to fruition now is kind of what the chapter is about.
Mm. So how does this affect what you're doing on a day-to-day at First Lien Capital? Like, maybe give us a little bit of insight into your process.
Sure. You know, I buy seasoned mortgages from the secondary mortgage market. My first book, Win-Win Revolution, was all about that guide to my experiences of becoming someone who acquires real estate through the secondary mortgage market. That's a good old boys network. It's the big private equity funds, it's pension funds, and it's banks. So if I'm acquiring from those folks, you know, the knowing how to acquire, how to model, how to deal with those people is one thing. Mm-hmm. And then knowing where the industry is going, where the stress is, where the opportunity is, that's the key. I have access to a good old boys network, so to speak, a very small group of very influential, high net worth folks in Wall Street and around the world who invest and trade in mortgages and real estate in large quantities. And by being someone who can step into that market and knowing where the opportunity exists, that's really kind of, you know, that's what's happened in the last year is we're seeing a transformation in where product will be coming from. By increasing interest rates so significantly, the way the federal government has had to do to tame inflation, we have subsequently broken the backs of the commercial real estate industry, for instance.
Yeah.
And the banks. And so that's really where, you know, that's where the opportunity is going to be coming in the next couple of
years. So what does this do to like just supply overall? Like how does that affect supply?
Yeah. And it's interesting because the normal everyday consumer isn't feeling this. If anything, the supply of real estate in your local markets is still zero on the residential side. So if you go to buy, if you're in the market to buy a house anywhere in America, chances are there's less inventory than there are buyers out there. Now we are seeing parts of the U.S. cool in terms of residential real estate prices, and in even certain areas of the West, Western U.S., where actually we're seeing a decline in certain specific markets that were probably overheated to begin with. But even a decline of 10% in an area like Austin, where you've seen increases of 20% per year, doesn't mean that, you know, you're still ahead, obviously, in the long term. And so that's kind of where, you know, what we're seeing about to happen, it's happening kind of behind the scenes in a way, because it's happening at the big mega financial institutions. Banks, for instance, are highly leveraged institutions. So as much as we want to believe that the federal government is regulating them correctly, the reality of it is that most countries in the world have maybe a dozen banks in their country. We have 1,500 banking institutions around America. When you include credit unions, small regional banks, 70% of the commercial real estate debt in this country is held on the portfolios of those 1,500 banks and credit unions. So if we see a major decrease in commercial real estate values, the story of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature, that's just the beginning of what might lie ahead.
Yeah. And if we look kind of like what's possible with all these smaller and regional banks, so they were, you know, a decent size, you know, a bank overall. But if we look at even some of the smaller regional players, depending on what their balance sheets looks like, it seems like they might even be more susceptible. Am I kind of off on that? Or
that's the great irony. You're totally right, Adam. And that's why the news doesn't properly reflect what's going on. If you can have three of the top 20 banks in this country fail because of a slight remark in their portfolio, then what does that do to a bank that's only got maybe $1 billion of deposits or 100 million of deposits? And so you're absolutely right. That is these banks that failed recently are the canaries in the coal mine. And as much as Wall Street, as Janet Yellen or the Fed or Jeremy Dimon want to come out and say that it's over, that the distress is gone, it just isn't true. It's just not factually true. There is a reckoning coming in commercial real estate. It, to the likes of what we probably saw in the savings and loan crisis of the 80s and early 90s. I was just a kid, so I really wasn't prescient to what was going on a daily basis. But if we have to liken what we're walking into, it's probably similar in many ways. Mm-hmm. What it means for an average consumer is probably not much other than, you know, if banks fail, then businesses will fail and new people will lose jobs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the federal government will step in and ensure deposits, small depositors will be covered. I think that we'll see a meltdown from the top down. That's what guys like Larry Summers are saying, that what may be ahead is more of a top down meltdown crisis, where some of the higher financial institutions either have to merge or go out of business. And you'll see some consolidation. And what will happen for us, hopefully, is there'll be a trickle out and trickle down of supply inventory. That certainly on the commercial side, there'll be a ton of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And one would think that would in some small way add to our supply opportunity on the residential mm-hmm. side.
One of the things that you wrote about in this, I mean, the title was, or the heading was just genius. As soon as I read it, I'm like, oh, come on, Bill. Like, this is overreaction is the American way. I was like, you and I talk quite a bit. So I'm like, all right, Bill, this is great. I mean, what do you mean by that statement?
Right. And well, I thought you were going to refer to the, you know, playing to win at the end of the Great Vacation.
Oh, that one's a given. Yeah, I was. That's I'm a good one too. That one yet, but we're I mean, not.
You know, because COVID in many ways was a big vacation, you know, yeah, for us. You know, and the government stepped in and printed $3 trillion to begin with, and added a few trillion after the new administration came in. And when you print that much money, you allow people to don't have to work to not work. And that's all classes, by the way, of people. So that's not making any kind of a political statement. Mm-hmm. But your comment about the overreaction is the American way is just that. And it's so true that when you look at what happened after, like, the last time we had a financial crisis was 2008. Mm-hmm. And leading up to that, there was an oversupply of free money in the mortgage mm-hmm. world. There were these no interest, no doc loans. Anyone with a pulse could get any number of mortgages on any number of properties. It was very easy. Mm-hmm. And what happened when that all started to crumble as the markets screeched to a halt in late 2007, early 2008. Mm-hmm. The banks lost liquidity in mid-2008. And the overreaction to that was nobody could get a mortgage for years.
Yeah.
And what happened on the banking side, on the secondary market where I play, where we're talking mm-hmm. pools of investments, pools of mortgages, pools of real estate, you went from stuff that was 100% of value mm-hmm. to pools of mortgages from 2008 to 2012 selling for anywhere from 9 cents on the dollar for a mm-hmm. second mortgage, or 25 cents on the dollar for an upside down first mortgage on a brand new house in Port St. Lucie, Florida, you know, up to 70 cents on the dollar where, you know, things still trade today for non-performing loans. Mm-hmm. So you see when financial crises happen mm-hmm. and liquidity dries up, which is what's happening right now, mm-hmm. banks are out of liquidity, private investors are running out of cash, the credit is drying up, which mm-hmm. is the backup to folks' liquidity, which mm-hmm. is making them feel poor or having less cash on hand to finish those real estate projects or reinvest in new deals. Mm-hmm. As that happens, forced sellers are going to be coming to market, and the American way will be that it'll be a fire sale. Mm-hmm. And there will be we will go into a time of opportunity where mm-hmm. you will see downtown office buildings in major metropolitan cities in America that are basically being given away.
Yeah, and we see that in LA right now for sure. Yeah. Like already.
You saw major, you saw Brookfield came in and gave back three office buildings to their lender. And who's their lender, by the way? Their lender is going to ultimately be the American taxpayer. Mm-hmm. Their lender, our CBC.
We're talking a huge company, huge company.
Yeah. One of the biggest real estate investment companies just walked in and gave back the keys on hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate. Mm-hmm. And that's been happening slowly over the course of the last year as the interest rates have just made these deals untenable. Mm-hmm. And we'll see more of that. And we'll see, it'll get to the point where buyers will start to become much more selective. Mm-hmm. Right. And there'll be fewer because less liquidity exists.
Yep.
And you'll see office buildings like that will be selling for less than their replacement costs in the not too near future. No, I mean, it's already happening. Like it's
So, I mean, so what's the play? What's the play as we kind of see some of the things that are going to play out? Like how do you foresee navigating this?
Well, one play is you invest in the first lien NPL opportunity fund. We are into our second fund right now. Yes. Our first fund amidst a market that was...
Congratulations, by the way. Second fund now? Yes, I know we've been talking long enough for the first one, but that's awesome.
So I founded this new fund, this new company, First Lien, about just over 2 years ago. It was March. We bought our first deal in March of 2021. We've since raised and deployed over $70 million of cash into over $100 million of debt that we've purchased against over $140 million of real estate. So very safe investment. We're buying stuff at a percentage of the underlying real estate collateral. We're buying at a low enough percentage that if real estate values decline or turn in any way, we still get paid in full. And we've modeled consistently, even prior to the foundation of First Lien Capital, I've consistently returned a mid-teens unlevered returns to my investment partners. Mm. And First Lien NPL Opportunity Fund is our first opportunity to go out to a wider range of investors, albeit you must be an accredited investor to invest with us. Yeah. But we take investments of $100,000, $500,000 up to $20 million. It's obviously a cash-intensive business. We're in the fundraising for Fund 2 right now. We have great returns in Fund 1. And it's building up that war chest to really take advantage of the opportunities. Because I'll tell you what's changed for me in the last few months, Adam. Mm-hmm. I have been chasing banks for 15 years trying to buy trying to buy loans, trying to buy real estate. You know, you knock on every bank's door and they just don't want to listen to you, you know, because they obviously are not in a position to really want to take losses on stuff.
Of course.
I have not ever, until the last 6 months, I've never been reverse inquired by banks. I've got banks calling me, offering me stuff every day. I've got the federal government coming to me with opportunities to buy stuff at a discount to the face value of the debt that is encumbered. I just happen to be sitting at the kind of at the doorstop of what this opportunities that lie ahead, and just in the right time, right place. And so that my play is to continue acquiring pools of real estate, residential or commercial, primarily residential, and working out those distressed opportunities on quality real estate, in some cases flipping the real estate, in some cases helping borrowers to modify their loans and stay in their properties. This is also a real benefit that we think we give back to the society because, you know, as private equity investors, we can go in and be more lenient than the banks maybe were. So if I can go buy a loan from the bank for 60 cents on the dollar, get to that borrower and say, hey, we're going to give you a little time. We're going to work through a modification with you. I can go and sell a modified loan for 90 cents on the dollar. That's a win-win.
That is.
That's where the book comes from.
And speaking of that, I don't want to assume that everybody kind of followed your train of thought towards the end there. Maybe tell us a little bit about the underlying assets and the things that you actually invest in the fund.
The fund is not an investment in my business. My business gets paid fees to manage the fund, and that's how I pay my people. As a matter of fact, we are designed in a structure so that we really only make money if the fund profits above a certain return. So we're in it for the long haul with each of our investors. Mm-hmm. And I privately, as well as my partners here at First Lien, are all privately invested as limited partners in the fund. Mm-hmm. The fund itself only buys real estate related investments. 100% mm-hmm. goes to the purchase of either a first lien mortgage mm-hmm. or the real estate itself. Mm-hmm. Primarily first lien mortgages, because this is a nuanced business, one that I have access to buying mortgages at a discount to their face value mm-hmm. and at a safe underlying LTV to the real estate that it encumbers. And we make our profits by either taking a full payoff or working it out to take back the real estate and then sell the real estate at a profit.
Yeah. And it's primarily commercial. Residential.
Residential. Yeah, absolutely. We do reserve the right to allocate up to 30% of our investments towards commercial. We mm-hmm. see so much opportunity in the commercial real estate world, especially in some of our markets that we play really well in. And so we will dabble a little bit in commercial. Mm-hmm. You know, there's commercial paper that you're buying on residential real estate. So, for instance, a multifamily residential building, we might buy the note on something like that. There's a lot of opportunity coming in small multifamily buildings, but something that's bigger than maybe your 1-4 residential. But the primary focus is buying first lien mortgages on mm-hmm. homes owned by Americans all across America. Yeah. In the case where they're not performing, if we can help folks to re-perform that loan, mm-hmm. all the better. That's the first mm-hmm. priority. And in the case where they can't afford to stay, mm-hmm. we let them exit with dignity. We offer them cash. Mm-hmm. We offer them to waive the debt or whatever it might be.
And that really is the win-win part. And I want to maybe stick a little bit longer on this and what that idea of modification means, because up to this point, you know, we've been talking about, you know, really your role as a partner in a fund and returning the rate of return that you know to your investors that you were working with them on, and also, you know, purchasing the right types of assets, taking the right amount of risk, all those things. So that's from the investor side of things that accredited investors can take part in if they meet the qualifications. But on the other side of things, like your approach to creating these win-win solutions and to trying to keep Americans in their home, it's so much further away from the idea of maybe some predator lending or some other things that other people are doing. Like, you have a completely different model. So I do want to spend some time with you maybe kind of unpacking that.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's good stuff. I got into this business, kind of fell into it as a real estate investor in Florida mm-hmm. back in 2008. It was 3 months before the fall of Lehman Brothers. I get a phone mm-hmm. call from a banker that's a private investor who says, mm-hmm. I can buy this loan from this bank that's going out of business. I name my price. I just don't know what the real estate's worth. Yeah. And so when I got, that was a light bulb moment for me. Yeah. But what I realized is if I'm going to start buying notes or debt mm-hmm. that is in default, I mean, who wants to be a debt collector, right?
Yeah.
And that's what's so beautiful about this business. I'm buying a collateralized debt, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm buying a debt on a piece of real estate. I know that real estate is not going to go down in value. Maybe if it does, I'm buying the debt at a percentage of that mm-hmm. that creates it so that my debt will get paid. Mm-hmm. So now I knew going into this, I didn't want to be a debt collector. Who wants to do that, right? Who wants to take people's homes?
Yeah.
So that's where the win-win paradigm was created. It was 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. I got together with my partners. I said, if we're going to do this, let's create a system that works for people. You know, and at the time, the loan servicing industry was completely in disarray. Hmm. There were way too many defaulted loans than the servicers could handle. Hmm. People were getting frustrated. I said to myself, there's got to be a better mousetrap here. Hmm. So if somebody wants to keep their home, when we buy, you know, something happens, you know, you lose your job temporarily, you get into a medical situation, mm-hmm. a loss, you know, what something happens that causes you to fall behind on a payment. Mm-hmm. The banks, in many cases, or their loan servicers, just don't have a lot of options. Mm-hmm. As private equity, this is an opportunity for us. Mm-hmm. So we're buying this loan that's not working. And the first thing we do on every non-performing loan is we talk to the borrower and we meet them where they're at. Mm. We say, you know, if you want to keep this home and you have the financial wherewithal to do it, let's find a way to make that happen. Mm. We put them into a trial plan. We give them 6 months. We permanently modify the loan and we help them avoid the foreclosure.
Yeah.
And then I can go back out and sell that loan in pools later on. But at the meantime, you know, we have a loan now that was non-performing that was mm-hmm. worth X, performing worth a lot more. And we've yep. created a situation where we've kept people in their homes. Wow. And so this whole paradigm, which I outlined in the book Win-Win Revolution I wrote 6 mm-hmm. years ago, is really what a lot of my competition in this mm-hmm. industry on the private equity side have adopted this similar paradigm.
Yeah.
I know investors that are competitors of mine that mm-hmm. have given this book to their new hires to say, this is the moral code by which we operate under.
Yeah.
It's about me listening. It's about hearing. You know, I sit down with borrowers and they're so used to being told what they can't do or what they can do mm-hmm. by the loan servicer, or the bank they own. Yeah. Then I sit down and I listen. What do you want? Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you're not getting a free home. I've yeah. got all the leverage, right? I've
of
got
course,
the
of course.
Lien, so I don't need to be a debt collector with these people. Mm. I get to be a friend.
Yeah.
And that's what I've trained my people to do. Mm-hmm. Let's find a way to work it. And that's where we create win-win resolutions every day in our business.
Yeah. And one of the things that so when you bring up the banks as well, it's just, and I like to kind of make this delineation. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason why for many banks, I mean, they're not necessarily in the business of loan modification, whether it's in their charter, whether it's like if they don't follow by the rules, now they're breaking something else to their shareholders. Like even if they wanted to, it's not saying that the banks are bad people. And I know you're not saying this, but I like to kind of bring that out. It's just that they may not be able to because they're not in that business. The loan processors, like every single thing, like the collectors, like that's all set up. That's a system. So when it comes to like what you're doing, you're actually in that business of being able to try to help and to go that extra mile that maybe even it's not nothing against your loan officer at the bank. They might wish that they could help you, but their hands are tied, or the bank itself might wish they could help you, but the bank's hands tied by the charter or whatever the rules are and the things that their board and all the things that are in place to where for yourself, you're in the business of creating that win-win.
Correct. 100% nail on the head. As a matter of fact, you know, I'll go a step further. Mm-hmm. Not only are the banks not really positioned, I mean, they have to set up rules and regulations,
of course, yeah.
servicing obligations. But the reality is the majority of residential mortgages aren't even held. They may be serviced by the bank. They may look like they're owned by the bank, but they've been sold, or a portion of that debt has already been sold either to a government-sponsored entity like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, or to another fund. So there's servicing obligations that really limit the optionality. And as private investors, we provide that optionality. It's 100% correct. Hmm.
Well, Bill, I have to bring this up, of course. Win-win revolution we talked about. Now we definitely have to talk about the real estate lowdown. So your podcast, I'm so thrilled and excited. You are on your 50th episode, man. Like that's it's a huge milestone. I mean, we've launched a lot of shows. Not everybody makes it to 50. Like, how do you feel? You going to Disneyland? Like, what's going on?
I'm just going to keep at it. You know, it's so funny. I've got one of my best friends from college. I'm 47 years old. So to give you an idea, that was a while ago that I was in college, but he was a podcast listener in the 90s, you know, when there was just the iPods, right?
That was the original podcast.
And I used to say, man, who wants to listen? What is this? This makes no sense. This is like AM radio. Who wants to do this? You know? I have totally shifted my perspective on it because the podcast medium allows, first of all, so many of us spend time in transit or on the go. And to have something of meaningful content, you know, the news doesn't provide it anymore.
Yeah,
there's no facts in the news, unless you're watching BBC, maybe. Yeah. You know, so to, you know, to really educate, I mean, this is a great medium to take along with you, to really speak to, you know, some of the nuances of whatever topic you might want to discuss. So I started the Real Estate Lowdown, and I'm now a loyalist of podcasts. I listen to podcasts everywhere I go, not even my own. But the Real Estate Lowdown is, yes, entering its fifth. This week will be its 50th episode. So we're just coming up on 1 year. You challenged me. I was one of the original podcasters. Yep. Challenge me to get a podcast out every week, and we've done one every week. We've never failed.
Amazing.
It's a mix of interviews with folks in the real estate and mortgage, capital markets, real estate investing industry. You know, I run the gamut. I've interviewed hotel operators in Cambodia to mom and, you know, mothers, stay-at-home moms that do fix and flip real estate investing on the side, to institutional investors in the mortgage market. I try to find some interesting folks. I've met some fascinating people over the years who really have great perspectives on either their world or on the real estate world in general. And then I do my Real Tidbit series, which I delve into specific topics of the real estate world. So like, if you ever want to know what an escrow meant, I spend 20 minutes talking about what the various meanings of escrow are and how it varies from state to state and how it might be used in a real estate transaction. So that way, when you hear people referring to escrow, you know what it means or what title insurance is. And that's what the Real Tidbit series does. So I just love it. It's an encyclopedia, hopefully, of information that we are leaving for the universe.
Yeah.
And I think we have a good time if you like listening to my voice. I hear I have the perfect face for radio.
Whatever. I'm not commenting on that one. But on that note, I'm going to say that we're just so thrilled to have you recording and distributing and just like all of the content we put. You know, you put a lot of heart into your content, into your brand overall, and the fact that we get to help on the distribution side of that and play any part in that's just been a lot of fun and a great ride. And the fact that you're hitting 50, I'm like, man, this is like, I swear it seems to me like just the other day. And I'm like, wow, 50? That's amazing. But time, like your catalog's building, it's all quality content. I highly recommend. So we're going to put the links to that, of course, in the show notes. Highly recommend everybody watching this. Go check it out. The Real Estate Lowdown. Well, Bill, I mean, a lot going on. Obviously, you have the second fund. You got, you know, your book with us, got your podcast. What's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for the company? Like, what's next?
You know, Adam, we met a few years ago when Mission Matters was just getting off the ground.
Yeah.
And the name says it all. I mean, this is I live, eat, and breathe my mission. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's not just in work. I have a mission in my personal life, which is being a father and someone who creates possibility in people's lives as a leader and helping them see their life in a way. So you know, what's next for me is how can we continue to serve the mission? Mm-hmm. Not only are we know we're going to make a ton of money in the First Lien Capital NPL fund. And I acknowledge you for creating this platform that allows folks like us with a mission the opportunity to share that with the world. And, you know, I think it's about continuing to stay the course that way. We have some exciting plans, not so that, you know, not only are we making money, but we're now reinvesting back in our society, both through time and money, educating, funding deals that are socially responsible, and you know, hopefully leading the way as win-win investors in the world.
Oh, fantastic. I love having you on here. If somebody, it's great. It's inspiring because now you're also pushing the needle. So when you've been blessed, right, you're thinking about like, okay, you know, we've been blessed. We're on the right trajectory. Now, how do we give back more? How do we figure out new ways to even rethink that? Like to think about what right, you're mentioning, sustainability or other types of projects or other things like that. Even being a trailblazer into those areas, much like, you know, 15 years ago when you came up with the win-win, you know, revolution and the idea of that concept and that framework and that moral code, you were trailblazing back then. The only thing, like, you know, it's just different. So that's now right, to see what you're going to build on this next leg of your career with more funds, more things, rethinking about how you can add to that give back portion to it, it's inspiring. So that being said, Bill, if somebody is watching or listening to this and they want to follow up and learn more about your business, about the books, about anything else, and just follow your journey, what's the best way for them to do that?
It's simple. Firstleancapital.com for investor inquiries. That's FirstLien capital.com. And if you're looking to reach out to me for any other reason, it's BillByMel.com. My name is spelled below, and you just add a .com to it, you'll find my personal website where you can reach out, find the book, find the podcast, stay abridged of upcoming appearances that I'll be making around the U.S. And just reach out. I'm very accessible. Love to do business or speak to anyone.
Awesome. And we'll put all those links in the show notes so that our audience can just click on the links and head right on over. And speaking to the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters or engaging in an episode or the content, we're all about bringing on business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives and having them share their mission, the reason behind their mission, you know, why they do what they do, and really what wakes them up in the morning so they get up into the marketplace and make a difference. If that's the type of content that sounds interesting or fun or exciting to you, we welcome you. Hit that subscribe button. We have many more mission-based individuals coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Bill, again, until the next time, I know we got a party coming up. We got some other celebrations and things. Look forward to working with you again. So thanks again.
Yeah, get your popcorn ready.
Come on.